You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Welcome back to another episode of our humble podcast here at the Neighborhood Archive. I'm excited to have a special guest with us today, Mr. Benjamin Wagner, who, as you may have seen on online, if you've done some snooping around, he's the writer and producer of Mr. Rogers and Me, a documentary that, if I understand correctly, is going to be available soon, hopefully for purchase, definitely for viewing in various ways. So, Benjamin, very, very, very pleased to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Me too.
What I'd like to do is just get your thoughts on the film itself, have you describe it to us a little bit, tell us a little bit about it, tell us what led to led up to you creating this film. Yeah, and just get your thoughts on it. You know, I don't want to take too much of your time, but, you know, I guess let's just jump right in with if you would, just kind of describe the film itself, you know, what it's all about. Yeah, sure. I'll just let you run with that.
Well, Mr. Rogers summered, as I say in the trailer and in the beginning of the film, Mr. Rogers summered in a modest gray shingle house on the edge of Nantucket Island. And my mother rented a tiny cottage next door and called me one day over the summer and said, "You'll never believe who I met." And we talked about it, and she then went and had dinner with the Rogers and basically befriended them over the course of that week or two, and said, "You really should come meet him." I told him all about, you know, you and your brother, and you should really come. And, you know, I don't know if I went out immediately or it was a couple of days or weeks or months. I just don't remember. This is in 2001. But I went pretty quickly because I was pretty excited to meet Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers really was her neighbor and my neighbor. So I went out to Nantucket and spent, it was actually the evening of my 30th birthday. And I, you know, was kind of fresh off the ferry from New York City. And I was on the back porch alone, kind of watching the sunset. And I quietly heard from the edge of the dune, "Is the birthday boy here?" And it, you know, kind of blow, you look over there and there's Mr. Rogers saying hello to me. So we talked a minute, and the next day we went over to his house for lemonade, and I played him some music on my guitar, and we talked and, you know, kind of got to know one another, all the families. And he gave me a brief tour of the house, which was, you know, really, really modest, but lovely. And, you know, I think the reason I ended up wanting to make the movie is in the back, he had a study on his garage with a little piano and a computer and a couch. And this part of Nantucket's beautiful, as I think you've seen in the film, and super tranquil. It's not a paved road. The roads are sand, and it's just beautiful. And he said, "You know, I don't hear a lot about your father. Your mom doesn't speak about your father. Tell me what happened." And, you know, my parents were divorced, and I immediately, we just started having this conversation about that. You know, they were divorced when I was 10 and how hard that was. And he was, he was so inquisitive and so thoughtful and so warm and so disarming and moving, that it really inspired me. It really moved me. And then on the back porch, we were talking about my day job at MTV News, and he said this great thing to me. He said, "You know, I feel so strongly that deep and simple is far more essential than shallow and complex. Deep and simple is far more essential than shallow and complex, right?" I mean, and I just thought about it. I mean, it was not like I was a shallow person, or am, and I don't think it's as simple as MTV being shallow and PBS being substantive, but it was really this thesis on substance versus form, you know, steak versus sizzle, like, and I thought about it a lot. You know, it was kind of a, you know, sometimes I wonder to what degree I was projecting and my memory is playing tricks on me, but I think it's something I've always thought about, and he's such a substantive person that it was really a, it was something to hold on to. So I I promised myself, as soon as I got home, I called my brother and I was like, dude, we should ask Mr. Rogers if he would give us a tour of the house on videotape so that we could let other people who were his fans or viewers growing up, if they could experience the same thing. And I kept writing, I have a to-do list at work, like, and I kept writing, you know, call Mr. Rogers, for literally like a year, or I don't know, it seems that way. And then one morning heard on NPR that he had passed away and thought, you know, obviously was crestfallen and heartbroken. And also, frankly, crestfallen and heartbroken that I hadn't taken the initiative so that others could experience this man in a very different way than we had on the television. Completely consistent, but almost even more so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after a year or two of discussions with my brother and thinking it through, I kind of came to a new way to approach it, which is maybe we could do a documentary. Chris and I have a big brother. We're just the two of us, no other siblings, and we've always been close, and we've always wanted to make a movie. We both work in media. And so I emailed, or maybe sent a regular letter to Mrs. Rogers after, you know, a fair period of time, as it, not to be cloying or pushy,
right,
and said, here's this idea. Maybe we could interview the sort of friends and neighbors that knew Mr. Rogers the best to talk about this idea of deep and simple versus shallow and complex. Because he had said to me, as you know from the movie, and I'm forgetting to tell him this story, that the year after I'd seen him, I told him how much I thought about the phrase, and he had sort of leaned into me and said, spread the message. So I kind of felt like I had this assignment from him to do it on top of this personal compulsion to do it. So she said, that sounds lovely, and you need to talk to Bill Eisler and Kevin Morrison. And I began sort of lobbying them, and God bless them, they gave me their blessing and have worked with me to, I mean, you know, all the footage in the film, much of the footage of the film is courtesy of Fred Rogers' company, although less of it is in the DVD. And, you know, over the course of about 2006 to about 2010, interviewed a number of people who knew Mr. Rogers. Really, it was not the nuclear family. So it wasn't, they had said, you know, we've done America's Favorite Neighbor, which is, you know, a sort of biopic.
Right.
We don't need another one of those. But we would, you know, if you'd like to do something that has a different angle, like more of the extended family. So I interviewed people who had been touched similarly as I had, but had become figures in media. So I knew from Nantucket that the Russerts, Tim Russert from Meet the Press, mm-hmm. that he had a house on Nantucket, and his family had met the Rogers. So he was one of the first people I thought of, and interviewed him before he passed away, a few years before he passed away, mm-hmm. which was, by the way, terrifying to interview one of the best interviewers ever. Susan Stamberg had always been a hero of mine, National Public Radio reporter, correspondent. And we got to her, and I frankly didn't know that she had done a number of specials with him, and an interesting thing that you'll remember is one of them was on divorce, so that was amazing, that connection. It goes even deeper that I don't really hammer in the film, but the song I played for Mr. Rogers the day I met him is called Summer's Gone, and it's from a record called Crash Site, which is all about my parents' divorce. See also the conversation we had in the backyard or the study. And the song I played for him, or the title track of Crash Site, was about a plane crash, because I always worried about planes crashing when my parents flew me back and forth from Chicago to Indianapolis, or Chicago to Philadelphia, where they'd lived. And he and Susan Stamberg talked about that in the divorce special. So all of these tiny little amazing connections begin to unfold. We interviewed Mark Brown, who created Arthur and was sort of mentored by Mr. Rogers. Two great authors, Amy Hollingsworth and Tim Madigan. A guy named Bo Lozoff, who Mr. Rogers and I were talking about the day that we met, which interestingly was just a few days before September 11th, so it was an interesting time in our own culture for sort of deep and simple. Also Davey Rothbart, who had met, he's a This American Life contributor who did a great story on This American Life, and had met Mr. Rogers when he was a kid as well, and has this sort of DIY media empire with Found Magazine and This American Life. So And also, we really felt like we needed an expert to talk about what's at stake, first and foremost with kids in media, but secondarily, more broadly, culture, you know, adults, all of us, like, what's going on in media, like, how are we being marketed to, what are the stakes? Susan Lin, who not only is an expert in children's media for the campaign for Commercial Free Childhood, but was a puppeteer, as you know, on The Neighborhood. So, you know, I've been asked how did I decide who to interview, and it was, you know, a lot of Googling. Most of this work was done, you know, on my BlackBerry, on the subway, in a cab, and in the middle of the night with my brother. You know, I didn't do any of this during the day. This was kind of a night job while I guess, went from producer to senior producer to executive producer to vice president to senior vice president in MTV News. So it's, you know, been a labor of love. And in June of 2010, literally 10 days after my wife and my first daughter was born, we premiered at the Nantucket Film Festival, as we'd kind of hoped to do. That was the sort of dream outcome. Mm-hmm. And Fred's eldest son was there, you know, John. And so it's just been, you know, I mean, even just in my telling you that long sort of arc, it's been full of, literally thousands of tiny, amazing points of light connecting. And it continues to be, even, you know, getting to know you and the work you're doing, and, you know, to be a part of a bigger neighborhood is really, really cool and gratifying and moving. And so we're really excited. You know, it's about to sort of see to meet the world, in about as big a way as possible. We're actually spreading the message. You know, I'd always hoped at the bare minimum we'd make this movie and play it at libraries and museums, but you know, church basements. But as it ends up, we made a pretty good movie, I think, and people seem to be pretty moved by it. And it's going to be seen by a lot of people, which is cool. You know, from a value standpoint and a mission standpoint.
Well, one of the things
that answer wasn't intended.
That's fine. One of the things about the film that I thought was really cool, you know, when I got a chance to see it, was I went into it based on the title alone. I think I shared this with you in an email. Based on the title alone, it comes across as, I expected it to be a documentary about you and your relationship with Fred Rogers. You know, Mr. Rogers and me led me to believe it was all about your meetings, your relationship, and so on. But it was very, very, I hate to say, a pleasant surprise, because, you know, I don't want it to sound like I don't want to hear about your relationship. But one of the things I really enjoyed was the fact that it wasn't just about you and him. It was about all of the lives that he's touched and all of the huge influence he's been, and you know, and just the idea of Deep and Simple, like you said, that from the get go of the film is the theme, you know, from the start of the film all the way through the end. And so one of the things that I you know, I was hoping that you would talk about a little bit would be just, you know, the idea of spreading the message. Like you said, that was one of the things that he had said to you, was to spread this message. And so I think I would think that that's something that you can't help but take personally, you know, that you can't just brush it off. It's, you know, to hear from, you know, Mr. Rogers, having grown up watching the show, you know, and things like that, to have him tell you, spread the message, you kind of have to internalize that and carry that out. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And I mean, I got to tell you, I do a more effective job telling these stories in the movie because it's obviously scripted and we worked very hard on it. But the night that he told me to spread the message was a full year later. And it was a big year, right? 2001 was a very difficult year. And I now live on the east side of New York, but I lived on the west side, down about 20 blocks. And, you know, I'd seen the towers fall with my own eyes. And New York went through a lot, and the nation went through a lot. And then continued to with sort of Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, in culture, not just media, but in culture, Deep and Simple was, you know, was a really important thing to consider. And it almost felt like, for a second there, culture might actually embrace a bit more substance. I think maybe we boomerang the other way. But when he told me to spread the message, the power... It was a really, truly a dark and stormy night on Nantucket, and the power was out. And this cottage, Kim, was the size of your living room. I mean, the cottage that my mom rented, it was like two bedrooms. Like, you know, I slept on the couch and the living room was tiny. The power had gone out. We had candles and firelight, and they had just like brought the birthday cake. You know, it was my 31st birthday. And so it's a, again, it's a little surreal. He just kind of leaned in, and when I told him, it was just me and him talking quietly, and said, spread the message. I mean, how can you not, to your point, how does that not land really, really effectively? How does that not? And, you know, Amy Hollingsworth had a similar situation, and Tim Madigan had a similar situation, and you did without the actual, you know, explicit charge, where I think it just becomes that the values and the sort of ethos and the substance of that man made it like an imperative, you know. And there have been a lot of moments where I've thought, wow, maybe you really overdid this, maybe you took it too seriously, maybe you imagined it, and I've had a lot of conversations about that. Amy Hollingsworth's been great. She's like, no, he chose you to do this, he gave you an assignment, you know. And I don't know. I know that I've taken it pretty seriously. I don't think my brother always, at panels after the screenings, he's always like, you know, we get the question, if you knew how hard it was going to be, would you have done it? Because we never made a movie. I mean, it's not that far from what we do at work. But, you know, I do news, which is very short form. We do some half-hour shows and some hour-long shows. But, you know, it's a team of 40, 50, 60 people. This was my brother and me. Every shoot we did was just he and I. I mean, I'm lugging lights, he's setting up. We're both, you know, doing the interviews, because invariably I'd, you know, run out of questions and turn to him. You know, we're editing basically between 8 and 2 in the morning, you know, over the course of years. I mean, it felt like it moved really slowly. As it ends up, it's about as long as most documentaries take. And, you know, most of the money was ours. We did a Kickstarter campaign. So my point is, like, I think we sometimes wonder whether we would have, had we known how difficult it was going to be, whether we would have still done it. And I think I would have. It's just been so important for me. And it ends up feeling like it's very important to others. And as I said, hopefully, as it sees the world in a broader way, because it's played at festivals and we've done a couple screenings, but for all intents and purposes, no one's seen it, you know? So it's going to be really exciting to see how effectively the message spreads and to what degree, you know, sort of journalists and viewers consider that deep and simple versus shallow and complex. Consider, you know, I don't know, I hate to be specific, but consider what happens when you have a culture of Kardashians, who I'm sure are lovely people, versus, you know, reading Rainbow. And you know, the great thing about media right now is that you're able to make a show, and you're doing it right now with this podcast. And so there is a lot of opportunity and option out there. But from a mainstream standpoint, it does not appear to be going more toward deep and simple. So it was a powerful, the phrase spread the message was powerful. I'm not sure had he not, you know, I always say it was a challenge or an assignment. I'm not sure had he not said that phrase, I would have pushed so hard and taken it so seriously. I mean, it's been, you know, it'll be 11 years by the time the sort of entire release cycle of the next couple months is over. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, it's a fourth of my life. But in many ways, it's probably been, you know, next to possibly being a husband and a father, the most powerful and important sort of process or journey. And frankly, as the film intimates, making the movie affected and influenced my capabilities in terms of, I think, being ready to be a husband and a father. So it's all connected pretty interestingly and pretty powerfully. I'm hoping my wife isn't going to comment from the couch behind me.
Well, that was another one of the things that I really appreciated about the film, was the fact that, number one, it wasn't just another biography. You know, there's America's Favorite Neighbor, that, you know, there's been an A&E biography. There's, you know, there's plenty of biographies out there. This wasn't about him and his history and his story. This was about his influence.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things I appreciated so much about the film that you guys did, was the fact that this was about the influence and the impact that he had on so many people. And, you know, that story was summed up in, you know, in interviews with a handful of of well-known people, but of the entire film, aside from the message itself, one of the main things, and again, I think I shared this with you in an email, one of the main things I appreciated about it was the last maybe 40 seconds of the film. I thought that
no spoilers.
Well, yeah, I don't want to spoil it by any means. Yeah. But I think that viewers, when they get to that point, I think they're going to realize that Mr. Rogers was more than a celebrity. Yeah. You know, because when I, you know, and again, I don't want to share too much about the film, you know, to where people, you know, know.
Can you believe I'm so sensitive about the ending?
No.
But I mean,
no, I completely understand.
The moment that it occurred to me how to finish the movie, mm-hmm. I'm a runner and I was out running and I was like, I got it. And I came mm-hmm. home and I called my brother. I'm like, I got it. I know how we can finish this thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm so glad that it made sense to you.
It made perfect sense. And I, you know, I look forward to hearing reactions from other people as they get to that point of the film, because as I watched the end of the film, I just kind of sat there for a second. You know what I mean? Like, as the credits are rolling, my wife and I are sitting there, and I don't think we spoke. I think we just kind of sat there for a second, and it's just kind of like, and just thought, you know? And I think you did a perfect job of taking his message and not only through the interviews with other people, but wrapping it up at the end. I thought that was absolutely perfect. Again, I know anybody listening to this is probably angry right now because they want to know what we're talking about. But
well, they will soon.
And which leads me to the other thing that I wanted you to touch on is how can people actually see this film?
Sure. It's funny. So in your prep email, I was like, oh, how am I going to address this? Well, as you know, it's being released on PBS DVD, and it'll be on iTunes and eventually on Netflix, and I expect other sort of digital outlets. The specific timing of it, there's a release that PBS is putting out in a couple of weeks, so like February 1st, all of the details will be made clear.
Okay.
So I don't want to scoop that, but
sure.
the upshot is... within 2 or 3 weeks, the entire rollout will be clear. But
okay. In
a nutshell, with the timeline notwithstanding, there will be a number of screenings. As I mentioned, we're doing one in LA, we're doing one in DC, we're doing a Paley Center in Los Angeles, Museum in DC, and then a number of smaller regional screenings. As I mentioned, will be in Chicago, and you know, folks can go to MrRogersAndMe.com to. Get a sense of all those screenings. There will be a soundtrack, as I mentioned, which we're working on right now, and we'll do a soundtrack release here in New York City. And then it will be on PBS, DVD, and iTunes, etc. And also, I don't know the timing yet, but it has been syndicated to PBS affiliates. Some, I think 26 PBS affiliates around the country will play a cut-down version of the film. The film's about 75 minutes, what you've seen. The DVD version is, the version you saw is 83 minutes, mm-hmm. not that I'm counting. the version that I think finally made it to DVD, because, you know, rights are different for everything, was about 70 minutes, and then there's a hour-long version that'll be on affiliates, so.
Okay.
And then, again, I don't want to scoop the PBS
sure.
press release, but then we have some pretty cool bonus material, which... I know that sounds really hypey and silly, but the reason I'm telling you is because I, as a fan and as a guy who basically bought a television and a DVD player so that I could listen to director's commentaries and watch the bonus material, like I was like, I don't know if I'll ever make a movie again, so I want to make sure that it's got good stuff. So it's got some really cool added features too. I mean, the short answer, without being cryptic, is really soon and at a logical date that would make sense to fans and friends of Mr. Rogers.
Gotcha.
How
gotcha.
About that?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. So anything else for the good of the cause that you want to throw out
no,
there about the
and
film?
Just, you know, as we've been talking this morning, I thought to myself, you know, the tricky thing about making the movie is, particularly since it's not like my job, is that it was impossible for us to talk to, I mean, you know, I don't know if you know the artist Chuck Close, but he's this, he makes these amazing huge canvases that are comprised of, they're huge portraits, like, you know, maybe 12 feet high by 6 feet wide or whatever, of like faces, like of, let's say, sort of this size, right? And they're comprised of squares of different shapes and sizes. So if you go way back, you just see the portrait. If you come in close, you see the individual
images.
And the way I always thought of this movie and what I pitched PBS on for the artwork, had time or could afford to do this, was that it's comprised of lots of different faces of all of the people that Mr. Rogers touched. You know, in a perfect world, I would make a user-generated website where people would send in photos of themselves as fans or themselves with Mr. Rogers, just like my photo of Mr. Rogers mm-hmm. and me. And if you were up close, you'd see thousands of photos of mm-hmm. people and him and fans. And if you backed up, you would see a big portrait of Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. Point being, I know that sounds odd.
No,
the reason I mentioned it is because, you know, as we've made this movie, it just becomes, and since we've really begun to release it and screen it, you know, we've met hundreds of people who are moved in their own way to take their own action, mm-hmm. which is really the idea, right? The idea of the movie is we all affect each other, and in little ways and in big ways, and, you know, maybe we can change the world by affecting each other more deeply mm-hmm. and simply and positively. Mm-hmm. So my point is, the only thing, you know, as you say, to add to the cause is just to say that I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad that we're meeting, and I'm glad that we're developing a relationship, and I'm glad to, forgive me here, but I'm glad to be your neighbor. And, you know, in the tapestry that is this portrait, like, you know, you're a me, man. That's the idea of Mr. Rogers and me. I mean, I suppose it's Mr. Rogers and us, you know? Mm-hmm. So thanks. And
no, thank you. Thank you.
And, I'm glad we did this.
Yeah. Well, we'll just wrap up there. And, again, a huge, huge thanks for you for taking the time out of your day or out of your weekend to do this with us. Really appreciate it. And by all means, anybody listening to this, I really, really encourage you to check out this film. It's one of the best ones you're going to see. You know, there's documentaries out there that are biographical. There's documentaries out there that skim the surface, and this is one you definitely do not want to miss. And on a side note, I know we mentioned Benjamin's music earlier. By all means, check out his music as well. I've been doing that recently myself, and it's phenomenal. I really encourage you, anybody who likes good music, check out his work there as well. So
thanks. It's interesting too, as I mentioned to you, that there is actually, I mean, no one's going to get this myopic about my music, but if you listen to it from a narrative and a sort of presentational standpoint, contextual standpoint, lyrical standpoint, the difference between the music I made before 2001 and after 2001 mm-hmm. is fairly striking, particularly, you know, after I met him. I was like, look, you're basically a guy who plays acoustic guitar and sings about love, so why don't you just embrace that instead of trying to be a rock star? Yeah. And it changed my life, and it's completely, you know, it's completely related to all the things we're talking about, and meeting him being like, you know, I like me just the way I am. Yeah. This is it. This is what you got. Like, embrace it. Be who you are. So it's been, even the last record I made, Forever Young, which was basically for my daughter, but, you know, benefits the Fred Rogers Center and Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood. I never would have made that if I didn't, you know, meet Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. And so it's all connected.
It is.
We're all connected, dude.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate it.
You got it.